Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Yud Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin 10 lines from the top of Daf Yud Ches. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side in the margin where you see the Nosei, the topic heading, one of the special features of our Shas Ozer, the marked Gemaras, and we've written Liyashev, our job or our task in the Gemaras to resolve Ha Dikotoni Bebraisa, that which is featured in, on the one hand, in a Braisa Yesh Beivri Shein Bivriya. There are aspects of things of halachas, of laws that apply to the Jewish male servant that are not in the Jewish female servant. That's one source. In other words, the source contrasts that those aspects, those laws that apply to the male servant, do not apply to the bondmaid. And we want to resolve that im ha dikotoni b'masnisin on Yud Dalam Ebeis, in the Mishnah on Yud Dalam Ebeis, it stated, Yesera alav amo ho'ivriya. The amo ho'ivriya has all the aspects of that which the Evid Ivri has, and she has beyond that. She has additional, things that apply to her. So let's now turn to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Yesh b'ivri she'en b'ivriya. There are laws that apply to the male servant and not to the female servant. V'yesh b'ivriya she'en b'ivri. And so to the opposite. Yesh b'ivri shehu yotzei b'shanim u'b'yovel u'v'misas ha'adon. The Jewish male servant finishes his term of servitude after 6 years. That's shanim. B'yovel means when the yovel arrives, even if it arrives, the jubilee year arrives even within the 6-year work period, and Mises Adam, the death of the master. Ma she'en kein be'ivriya, which is not the case with regard to the female servant. V'yesh be'ivriya she'harei avriya yotze b'simonim, the female maidservant who is sold by her father while she's a minor to some master. She leaves servitude with simonim, with the producing of pubic hairs, which is the sign of adulthood. And v'eino nimkeres v'nishnes, she cannot be sold and then sold again. If, let us say, that she was working for her master and circumstances were that she left his service, and we can't get into too much detail because we have to let the Gemara develop the idea. She can be sold again, resold into service by her father. That's nimkeres v'nishne, sold and then sold again. Umaftin oiso bal korcho, and she can be redeemed against his will. Mashen kein bivri. And these things would not apply to the Jewish male servant. We translated the source, understand that the translation does not reflect the actual final understanding. Omar Mar, Yesh b'ivri shein b'ivriya. We just saw that in this source. V'romini, and we raise a contradiction. Yesera alav amo ho'ivriya shekoina atzmo b'simonim. The Mishnah on Yudalan Rebei said that the female servant has an additional aspect to her beyond that which the male servant has, and that is that she acquires herself. In other words, she achieves freedom from her work obligations with the production of simonim. But by saying the term yisera olav, that you're saying more than, that means she has aspects that she has the aspects that the male servant has, and she just has an additional feature that he doesn't have. And with regard to the male servant, he's sold into servitude as an adult already. There's no issue of hair, pubic hairs developing. So the question then is quite clear. We see that the Braisa before and our Mishnah from Daf Yudalid seem to contradict. The Gemara answers, Omar Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says that which it said in the opening source that there are things the male has that she does not have. Kagon Sheyoado. The female, after sold into servitude, was married by the owner. That's called Kiddushei Yi'ud. We've spoken about this in our recent Shi'urim. So he married her, or his son married her, so she doesn't go out. She's a fully married woman. And obviously then, as the source said, he leaves his servitude with years, with Yoivel, with Mises Adon. That's not the case anymore. She's married. The Gemara says, Yo adop shita, kita baya. That's obvious. I don't need a Tanaic source to tell me that which is obvious. If he, Yo adop, he married her, in order for her to be released, she needs a divorce document, a regular get. She's a regular wife in the meantime. Why then do I have a source to tell me that the aspects of the Ivri are not present in the Ivri of she's already married? Mahu detemo. I would have thought, lo live to law hilchasa mina. It's true she's married, but she got married through yi'ud. That means she was a maidservant, and now she got married. So I would have thought that the halachas of an ama ivriya still apply, and that would mean that if she wants to leave the marriage in one of the above mentioned ways, after 6 years, or with the yovel or the misa sadan, that she could walk out. So kamash malon, we're telling you in this source that the things that the Ivri has, that the male servant has, she does not have because she's fully married, and all the previous things that would have enabled a servant to leave do not apply to her anymore. The Gemara asks, well, ihachi amai yoytze besimonim, if the source above is speaking about the female bondmaid as having been married, what does it mean she goes out with production of simonim, of the hairs? Hachi koma, what the source is saying is, im lo yo'ado, if she wasn't married by the master or his son, then yoytza af besimonim, then she would depart even with simonim. In other words, the laws that apply to the male servant would apply to her as well, plus her going free with simonim. But that's, once again, all that would be true if she didn't have you, she wasn't married. The Eino Nimkeres Vinishnes. We pointed out that the Ivriyah, the bondmaid, is not sold and then resold. Michlal, we could infer from this that the Eved Ivri Nimkar Vinishne, that a male servant could be sold and then sold again. That means if he left his master, he can he would be resold. Let's point out that in the course of this discussion, we're going to be referring to the case of a male servant who was sold forcibly, sold by the courts because he owed money as a result of theft, and he didn't have the means of compensating the victim, so he was sold into slavery for up till 6 years. From what we mentioned before in the source, that she is not Nimkeres Venishnes, she can't be sold twice, implying that he could be sold twice. we ask v'hatanya, but we have a source that would contradict the inference. We have a bracketed section. Let's skip it initially. The pasuk says b'genei vaso. He is sold because of the theft. The court will sell him in order to compensate his work, his service, his servitude will compensate the victim. The victim will be compensated through this thief's working for him. And we learn from the word begenevoso, kevon shnimkar pam achas shuv I ato rashoi lemochro. Once he was sold, he cannot be sold again. Well, that's a direct it's a contradiction to the inference that we drew from the source above. We skipped the bracketed section. Let's go over that now. Begenevoso, the individual who was a thief can be sold to compensate for the thievery. Velo bekfelo. Kfelo, from word kefel, the double payment. In thievery, when one steals in a stealthful fashion, he pays not only the principal, but he has to pay the principal twice. In other words, principal plus one. The principal, if he stole something worth $50, he has to pay $100. Let us say you have a thief that had enough money to pay the principal, but he didn't have enough money to pay the kefel, the second payment, the second amount, the double amount. The Torah says that if it's a matter of paying the kefel, a person is not sold into slavery for compensation of the kefel. So a fellow who had enough money to pay the principal, he pays the principal, he doesn't have to, he's not subject to being sold into servitude in order to pay the kefel. The word zmomo is associated with the phrase eidim zomimim. That's a situation where a person testifies. Let's use a concrete example. This gentleman was, he and another witness testified that so-and-so, Mr. X, is a committed thievery. And then it turns out that two other witnesses come and say, how could you guys testify that Mr. X committed thievery on such and such a date when you were with us in another place on that time? The Torah says that witnesses who are shown to be false in that fashion, they're called Eidim Zomimim, and whatever they tried to impose on the victim or the defendant, they must in turn pay, they must suffer. So that if they tried to mechayev someone payment, they have to pay instead. In this case, if you have the false witnesses that were claiming someone is a thief, let's say these false witnesses did not have the money to pay. In other words, they didn't have the amount to pay that which they were trying to make the victim pay falsely. So we know that if a person himself committed an act of thievery and he didn't have the means of paying, so he is sold into slavery. Even though the law of Eidim Zomimim says what they tried to do unto the victim, they must suffer, the Gezeiras HaKos of this pasuk, Begenevo So, is exclusionary. It excludes the Eidim Zomimim from, in the event they don't have the money to pay, from being sold into slavery. So not sold into slavery as a result of their being Eidim Zomimim. We read this already, but let's read number 3. Begenevo So, kevon shenimkar pa'amachas shuv I ato rashoi lemocho. Once he is sold into slavery, you cannot sell him again. Ah, but before we dashed underline just a couple lines above where it says David Ivri Nimkar Vinishna, he can be sold and resold, and here you see not so. You notice a marking, a triangle appears on the side of the Gemara. We have a nosei slash mivne. Mivne means a structural note, which explains why we feature the triangle. Tshuvos, these are answers, liyashev, to resolve, hamakoros, the sources, beinyan eved ivri nimkar v'nishna, regarding this very topic of an eved ivri as he sold and then resold. The Gemara. Omar Rava lo kasha. There's no contradiction between these two sources. Kan b'genevo achas, kan b'shtei genevois. We look at Rashi on the upper part of the narrow lines. Kan b'genevo achas, kan b'shtei genevois. B'genevo achas, pam achas. For one act of thievery, he can be sold once. The im eino shava kol genevoso. Let us say you have a fellow that he's worth for his 6 years of work only half the theft. So that if a man stole something worth $1,000 and you would calculate that 6 years of his work is worth $500, so he'll work for the victim 6 years, in effect providing compensation of $500, when the entire theft was $1,000, he's not sold again for another 6 years to cover the entire amount. And that's what Rashi's explaining. If he's not worth all of the Gneva, he's worth only half, let's say, Eino Nimkar Bishvil Chetzya. He's not sold for the second half. Ukshiyotse Himocher Mishum Chetzya. I'd like to read that line again, but faster, so that you get the real flavor of it. If he is Eino Shava Kol Gneva, so Eino Nimkar Bishvil Chetzya Ukshiyotse Himocher Mishum Chetzya. He is not to be sold for the 6 years to cover half, and then sold the second time to cover the second half. The high dekotoni v'nimkar v'nishne, the source that said he is sold twice, that's b'shtei genevois. Two separate acts of thievery. Afilu lo omad bedin ad shegonav shtehem. Even if he wasn't brought to trial until he committed the second theft, v'eino shove ela demei ho'achas, and he's worth only the value of one of the thefts. He committed two acts of thievery, each one $500. 6 years of his work is worth $500. Nimkar v'chozer v'nimkar t'cholchano v'chano karino bei v'nimkar b'gnevoso. In a case like that, since it's two separate thefts, he sold for 6 years. That will pay for the first act of thievery, which was worth $500. And then he'll be sold again for another 6 years to compensate for the second act of thievery. The Gemara asks, though. We go back to the Gemara. Omar le Abaye. Abaye asks on Rava's explanation. Begineva so, when the Torah tells us that he sold because of his theft, tuva mashma. Begineva so implies, even if it's a function of multiple thefts, he sold only once. We look at Rashi, Tuva Mashma. We're picking up Rashi where we left off. Im Omad Al Shteyem Bedin Echad. Let's say he committed one act of thievery, wasn't brought to trial yet, and then a second act of thievery, and again, and then finally was brought to trial. He's brought to trial for multiple acts of thievery. Kulon, Rashi goes on, Kulon Karina Bei Beginei Voso. Kedachtiv, the word Beginei Voso, which appears in the singular, nevertheless implies or can refer to multiple thefts as well. And you have precedent for this idea of a singular word referring to many, where the Pasuk in Sefer Yonah says, Uvehema Rabo, Vahadoga Asher Bayor. So that you have the word Behema, but it's a reference to Rabbah, to many. So too the word B'Genevoso can refer to multiple Genevus. So that even for multiple Genevus, the word B'Genevoso appears. And we learn from that he can be sold only once. Ah, so what about the source that said that he can be Nimkar twice? We inferred above from the Hebrew bondmaid, the Jewish bondmaid, she cannot be sold twice, but the Jewish servant can be sold twice. Elo Omar Abaye. We continue then in the Gemara. You see the second triangle, second stage in trying to resolve these contradictory sources. Kan ba'odam echod, kan b'shnei b'nei odam. If it's a matter of theft from one person, even if it's multiple thefts, but from the same person, the slave is not sold and then resold to compensate for the additional thefts. If the thief stole from different people, from several people, so each person can bring him to court. And for each court case that the separate people bring him to, he becomes liable, if he doesn't have the means of paying back, to serve as a slave. There's another point that Rashi adds. Let us say the thief stole, he was brought to trial, and they said, you were chayav to work for 6 years. And then afterwards, he stole again, and was brought to trial for the second theft. There, he would be sold again and again. Because there is not a function of multiple thefts, but it's multiple thefts, each one having had its own court case. We continue in the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Gnevo elef veshove chomesh meos. The value of the theft was 1,000, and he, 6 years of his work, is worth 500. So we have, he stole, let's say, from one person something worth 1,000. His entire 6 years of work is only worth half of it. Nimkar, and here we're going to use the girsa that the Gro quotes from the Rambam, v'eino chozer v'nimkar. That conforms to what we saw above. He sold, he'll work 6 years, and the victim will get compensation for only half of the value of the theft. But that's it. He's not chozer v'nimkar. He's not resold. Gnevo chomesh meos v'shove elef. The Tanakhama says, there's another opinion on this, but the Tanakhama says that if he stole something worth 500, and his work of 6 years is worth 1,000, eino nimka klal. He's not sold at all. Rebbe Lezer Omer, im hoya gnevo keneged memkoro nimkar, if the value of the theft equals the value of his work for 6 years, not more, not less, but the same value, then he can be sold. V'imlav eino nimkar. If there's lack of equality in the value of the theft and the slave's worth of slave's 6 years of work is worth, no sale. He's not sold. Whether the slave is worth more than the theft or the value of the theft was worth more than the slave. When there is a discrepancy, he is not sold. The Tanakhama, in the source we just read, made reference to a case of a discrepancy, but only on one side, namely, where the value of the theft was worth less than the slave. Rebbe Lezer did not make a distinction. He said, whenever there's a discrepancy, there's no sale. Omar Ravo, Baha Zachinu Rebbe Lezer L'Rabbanon. It's in this matter, in this machlokes, Rebbe Lezer is, let's say, victorious over the Rabbanon. Rebbe Lezer's reasoning is clearer, is more acceptable than the Rabbanon. And this is all part of a long point. The Maishna Gnevo Chomesh Meos V'shove Elef the Ein Nimkar. What is different about a slave who a man who stole 500 and his 6 years of work is worth 1,000? That in that case, what did the Tanakhama say? He said he's not sold. And why not? Because dinimkar kulo omar rachmona velo chetzio. When the Torah speaks about him being sold, it means when he is, when his entirety is sold. But when his work of 6 years is worth twice the amount of the theft, so that's chetzio. Half of him is worth the value of the theft. And that doesn't conform to the word indicates. We'll read this again. Dinimkar kulo amar rachmana. It's only when his being sold entirely equals that which was stolen. Velo chetzio, not a situation where his work of 6 years represents twice the value of the theft. Namely, his sale of 6 years would have, in effect, half of that work time would have been enough to compensate. But we don't have a concept of his being sold for half the amount of time. So, just like in that case where he is worth twice the value of the geneva, there is no sale. Hachinami, so too, when you reverse the amounts where the theft was worth twice his value. So too here, Hachinami, nimkar b'geneivaso, amrachmona, v'lo nimkar b'chatzi geneivaso. That means if his 6 years is worth the actual amount of the theft, then he sold. But not a case where he is worth only half the geneva. And that's what v'lo nimkar b'chatzi geneva so, where his 6 years of work would cover only half the value of the theft. So Rebbe Lozer's argument is to the Rabbonon, just like in one case you acknowledge that there has to, that if there's a discrepancy between his work value and the item, there is no sale. So too, in the other case as well, you should acknowledge that once there's a discrepancy, no sale at all. Which is, in fact, Rebbe Lozer's opinion. We continue with a quote from above. We have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align it with the star above and see where this quote comes from. It said, "Umaftin oiso baal korchoi," she can be redeemed from servitude against his will. Throughout the Shas, those who are veterans of our Gemara markings, Shirim, know that public enemy number one is a pronoun. And oftentimes the Gemara deliberates who the pronoun, what the pronoun, or to whom the pronoun is referring. Here we have a case in point. She is redeemed against his will. In the Gemara text, if you skim ahead, you'll see we have a house marking highlighting Rava and Abaye. On the side, we have a Nosei / Mivne heading, which reads, where the house is featured, Deois, these are opinions, Lefaresh Hodikotoni, Am Wivriyo Maftin Oiso Baal Korchoi. The Jewish bondmaid is redeemed against his will. Baal Korchoi Shelmi, against whose will? So now the Gemara. Sova Rava Lememar. Rava thought to say, Baal Korche de Odon, against the will of the master. Omar Le Abaye, my Nihu, what is the intent of that suggestion? In other words, what would you be giving the master against his will in order to release her? So the Gemara is asking, my Nihu, what is that? What is the element? What is the entity that you're giving him? De kasafno le shtora dome. You'd be writing an IOU, a document indicating the value of the work that she would provide until she would have left otherwise. And you give him this document. And when he gets the document, she would go free. The Ritva adds, because when you see this Gemara, you're saying, well, isn't the most obvious thing that you would be giving him is cash? Why does the Gemara come up with this idea of, well, you would be giving him this a piece of paper with an amount, a type of IOU? So the Ritva says, and we've included his interpretation. is a commentary on the side where we've noted the Loshon HaRitva, which says, De'ilu b'kesef bal korchoi, if the source above was referring to a cash payment to the owner against his will, ma'iria amuvria, why does the source focus on a Jewish bondmaid? Afilu bevid ivri nami, the same would apply to a Jewish servant. If he comes up with cash, he could force the owner to take cash and have himself released. Elavadai lomar, the fact that the source is focusing on the Jewish bondmaid, it's to come up with this pshat of the kosev leishtara adomeho bal korchei. We can see this in the Rashi, across from here, Rashi is my nihu. Hechi domi bal korchei de ivriya, tfei me ivri. Notice how the Ritva's pshat is hinted to here in the Rashi. What is special about the ivriya more than the Eved Ivri? E lemeimra, de les le giroina. If it's to suggest that the father doesn't have the cash, kasvinon leishtora al domeo, v'titnom lo kishitasig yoda, he doesn't have the cash now, so he writes an IOU that when he comes up with the cash, he'll give it to the owner, the one who bought her. Mino lon ha, from where would we come up with such an idea that you can force the master to take this piece of paper? Ihu nokit marganisa, he, the master, is holding on to a pearl, he's holding on to something of value, gufa hamishubadlo, he's holding on to an actual bondmaid who's duty bound to serve him. Vanan yavino lechaspa, and in exchange for the pearl that he's holding, we're going to give him a shard, this piece of paper. We go back to the Gemara, and the Gemara now says what we saw already in Rashi. Are you suggesting that this release against his will, and if we interpret his meaning the master's will, is this IOU? Why should the halacha acknowledge or recognize such an arrangement of forced release in exchange for the piece of paper? Nokit marganisa biyodei, the owner has the Jewish bondmaid, which is worth something. It's like a pearl in his hands. Yahivno le chaspa, should we in exchange for that give him a chaspa shard? So that's not the pshat. Elo Omar Abaye. Abaye comes up with a totally new direction. Bal korche de'av, the forced redemption is against the father's will. In other words, if he has money to redeem her, we'll force him to redeem her. Mishum pagam mishpocha, for the sake of the prevent pagam is that which is insulting to the family. Actually, pagam is a term that indicates something negative, defames the family. Having a family member, this girl, sold into servitude is a pagam mishpocha. So if the father has the money, for whatever reason he's not motivated to redeem her, but the family name is suffering, we force him to redeem her. Well, ihachi eved ivri nami nichpinu livnei mishpocha mishum pagam mishpocha. In the case of the eved ivri as well, we should force a redemption in order to preserve the dignity of the family. The Gemara says, well, in the case of the Eved Ivri, if he's forcibly redeemed, you know what he's going to do? Hoder Ozil, Mazvan Afshi, he'll go and sell himself again into servitude. And what would we have accomplished? The Gemara asks, well, Hochinami Hoder Ozil Mazvan Law, if the father is forced to redeem her, what's stopping him from selling her again? The Gemara says, the Halacha stops him. Ha Kotoni Eino Nimkeres Venishnes. We have been taught already. We saw that in the source above. You'll notice where we made reference before to the star on that line, you saw she cannot be sold twice. Umoni Rabbi Shimonhi, the source above that says she cannot be sold twice, is in accordance with Rabbi Shimon. His opinion will appear in the following Tanaic source, Desanyo. Before we read the source, we glance at the sign under our nosei, our topic heading, Machloikis Tanoim, Ve'inyan Mahem Zchuyus Mechirus Yesh La'av Bito. We see a Tanaic disagreement regarding what privileges does the father have with regard to the sale of his daughter. Hagemara Tazbir, Sheshorish Machloikis Hu, Ve'im Yesh Eim Lemikra O Yesh Eim Lemasoras, Ve'kesh Leposuk Ve'vigdoi Bo. The Gemara later will explain what the basis of this machlokes is, and it revolves around the posuk in Parshas Mishpatim in Shmos Perek Chaf Aleph Posuk Ches, where the term appears bevigdoi ba. And some approaches say that you emphasize the way it's read, and we read it bevigdo, and the word bigdo implies, we'll see as the Gemara goes on, that implies one idea from the word beged, clothing, a talis, and there's yesh aim lamasoris, means that what you emphasize is the way the letters appear. The Torah has no vowelization, so the way the letters appear, being that after the second base there's no yud, the way you would have read had we not had a instructions in how to vowelize it, the masores is the way the letters appear. You would have read it the vogdo ba, bogad. Bogad has to do with dealing falsely with someone. In this case, it means having sold her. And we will go over that shortly. In the meantime, we made reference to the Tanaic opinion of Rav Shimon that once a father sells his daughter, he has no rights to sell her a second time. Now the source, the Sanya. Mocher Adam Ezbito Leishus Veshone, Leshifchus Veshone. According to the first opinion, a father has the right to sell his daughter into marriage. That means marry her off. The term Mocher is in effect, he's getting money from the husband that's going to marry her, so he's allowed to marry her off. And if, let us say, the husband divorces her or he dies before they consummated the marriage while she's still an arusa, so she goes back to her father's domain, and as long as she hasn't brought forth the simonim, the pubic hairs, she's still a minor, the father can marry her again to someone. Meshiflus v'shoina means he sells his daughter into servitude. Let's say he sold a 4-year-old girl into servitude. Don't ask us now what does a 4-year-old girl do, but she's sold into servitude. She would work for 6 years. After 6 years, she goes free. She goes back to whom? To her father's house. She's still a minor. She's now 4 plus 6, 10 years old. According to this opinion, the father has a right to sell her again, because she's still a minor. So she would be work for another probably 2 years until the pubic hairs, the simonim, emerge, which are a basis for her going free. That's shivchus, into servitude, vishona, and do it again. Leishus, achar shivchus. Another arrangement is, if the father had sold her into servitude, shivchus, he can then... And she left the servitude. We gave an example already. She worked 6 years and she's still a minor. He, the father, can then marry her off. He has the right to marry her off to someone and receive the kesef kiddushin from that husband. Avol, loy l'shivchus achar ishus. If the father married her off to someone and she left that marriage while still an arusa, the father does not have a right to sell her then into servitude. Reb Shimon Oimer, Keshem She'ein Odo Moicher Ezbito L'Shifchus Achar Ishus, just like you said, the Tanakhama said, no sale into servitude after matrimony, Kach Ein Odo Moicher Ezbito L'Shifchus Achar Shifchus. He likewise cannot sell her into servitude a second time. If he sold her once into servitude, he cannot do it a second time. And based on this, we are answering the objection that was raised before. If you're going to force a sale, a redemption because of pagam mishpocha, so we said in the case of Eved Ivri, we should say the same thing. So there we said, no, we're not going to force there because he'll sell himself a second time. What about the father? Won't he sell the girl a second time if we force him to redeem her from the first period of servitude? So to that we answered, no, the father will not have a right to sell her a second time based on Shita's Rabbi Shimon. Ubeplukta dehani tanoi. The Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon were arguing. We saw the point of difference between them. What's the basis of their argument? The basis of their argument is a verse in the Torah. And that same verse over which they argue, the following Tanoim also argue. Where Rashi takes pains here to explain this expression, ubeplukta dehani tanoi, throughout the Shas, it usually means that whatever controversy we saw is paralleled by the following controversy. That's not the case over here. We're not going to see a parallel controversy, but what we're going to see is a machlokes tanoim, and the parallel is that they argue over the same pasuk. How in the final analysis each opinion comes up with what they say, the Gemara will run a summary for us. So now, what's the machlokes? What's this other machlokes tanoim? So the Gemara quotes from the pasuk we mentioned before, pasuk in Shmos, on Parshas Mishpatim, Perek Chof Aleph, pasuk Ches, the Pasuk itself says, "Imro b'ene Adonai asher lo yado v'hefto li'am nachri lo yimshoil l'machro b'vigdo ba." Pasuk is dealing with a bondmaid that was not married by the master, and it then says at the end of the pasuk, "Lo yimshoil l'machro b'vigdo ba." We can't translate that because we have to leave room for the Gemara with the variety of opinions. So the Gemara at the bottom line says, "Desanya bevigdoi ba." The first opinion in this new source in Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Akiva. He says, "Kevan shepiresh taliso aleha." The expression "piresh taliso" literally means taking a talis, an outer garment. We today have prayer shawls that we call a talis, so you can imagine something like that. And once it was spread over her, that's an expression that is associated with marriage. Shuv ein rashoi lemochra, divrei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva sees in the word bevigdo ba, the reading is what is to be, the way we read it, the vowelization that based on which we read the Torah, read it in shul, in synagogue, we read it bevigdo ba. Even though, if you were to see that word and not have any prior knowledge of how to read it, you would have read it differently. You would have read it bevogdo ba. However, Rabbi Akiva emphasizes what we call yesh aim lemikra. Aim means the main emphasis is placed on the way you read the word, and the word bevigdo implies an article of clothing, like the word beged. And the idea of beged is, as the source says, spreading the talis over her, which is, we'll say, an act of marriage. So the Torah is saying, once a person does that, once a father gives his daughter over into marriage, he loses his rights to sell her any further. Rabbi Elozer Omer, bevogdo ba. Bevogdo ba is the lashon, the root of that word is bogad. Kevon shebogad ba shuv ein rashoi lemochra. Bogad has to do with not marriage, but selling her into servitude. We've noted the pasuk from Shmos, Perikof Ala Pasuches, on the side of the Gemara. There's a Rashi on the third narrow line, You notice the words La'am Nochri. We didn't actually see those words in the Gemara text, but it's from the Pasuk. And what Rashi does now is he explains the opinions of the Tanoim, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Elazar, which how each one sees their opinion in the Pasuk and the way they emphasize the reading. The Gemara itself goes on just and cites the Shitas in a rather abbreviated way. So what we're going to do is we're going to read the next 2-3 lines of Gemara and then go over the Rashi, who is quite thorough on this matter. So we continue in the Gemara momentarily. B'mai komiflagi, Rebbe Elazar sovar. Rebbe Elazar read it b'vogdo ba, and he came up with his Shita that when a father sells her into servitude, he cannot sell her again. He holds yesh ein lamasores. We emphasize the way the letters appear and how you would vowelize it on your own. That's the emphasis. In order to derive a halacha, we emphasize the masores. As we said, masores literally means the tradition, but it means the tradition of the letters as they appear, how it would be vowelized. Rabbi Akiva savar yesh aim lamikra. Rabbi Akiva, who read it as beged, he made reference to the talis. He emphasizes the way it is read in actuality, and the word is read as bevigdo ba. Rabbi Shimon savar. Rabbi Shimon, whose shita we saw in the previous source, who said just like the father cannot sell her into servitude after giving her over into marriage. So that just like servitude is ruled out after marriage, servitude is ruled out after servitude. So how does Rabbi Shimon come up with that? Because Rabbi Shimon Sovar Yesh Aim Lamikra Ulamasoras. He says you have to emphasize, derive halachs from both ways of reading the word. Now, as we said, we're going to look at Rashi. Rashi has the words Li'am Nochri. You'll notice in the Pasuk that we have written on the side, which began, No'imro b'eini adoneo asher lo yada, the master who bought the Jewish bondmaid, did not want to marry her. V'hafda usually means, and she was redeemed. Li'am Nochri, that's an expression that we're going to, that Rashi explains immediately, but the pasuk says Li'am Nochri lo yimshoil lemochra bevigdo ba. Rashi, La'am Nochri, what does that mean? And here we're not translating it. It says Dahainu l'shivchus. The girl had been sold into servitude. The master didn't want to marry her. She left the master through redemption. She's back with the father. The father cannot sell her into shivchus. Lo yim shalav me'achar shepiresh taliso me'achar shepiresh taliso odoin olel l'shem yud. And here we're departing from the straightforward translation of the pasuk, and we're Rabbi Akiva is understanding things to mean that once the father had given her over into marriage, and the master had spread his garment over her, which is a lashon of marriage. Im girsha beget v'chozrei tzelvia. If he then divorced her, and she went back to her father's house, the pasuk says the father cannot sell her into servitude. So that's Shitas Rabbi Kiva, that after father giving her over into marriage, father cannot sell her into servitude. Avol lo ya'ada v'chazrei tzelav. If the master had not married her and she went back to the father, chozrei mochra, the father can sell her again. So she was sold once to servitude. She can be sold again. Kerabonon, like the sheet of the rabbonon, diamri liel l'shivchus achar ishus hu delo. Servitude after marriage, that is not allowed. Ki hacha de mechiyada havala liishus. Just like we're saying here, that if the master had married her, that is the point at which the father cannot any longer sell her into servitude. Avol l'shiflus achar shiflus motzi masmin. But that case, the case of servitude following servitude, the father has a right. A double or twice sell into servitude is something the father can do. Rebbe Lozer Omer. So up till now, we were featuring Rebbe Akiva. And Rashi pointed out, Rebbe Akiva agrees with the Rabbonan that the only restriction is servitude after marriage. Rebbe Lozer Omer, Kevon Shebogad Ba, Shemochro Leshifchus, Rebbe Lozer, who emphasizes the way the letters appear and how you would vowelize it on your own, you would have read it as Bogad. Bogad is it means he sold her into servitude. So once the father had Bogad Ba, he had sold her into servitude, Shuv Eino Yochol Lemoichro Liam Nochri, he cannot sell her again. The term Liam Nochri, Tahainu Shiphus. That's what we saw above. And what we're describing here is the prohibition of the father of selling into servitude after servitude. Avol l'shiflus acharishus, but if the father had given over into marriage and she returned to his domain through divorce or death of husband before they consummated the marriage, before she reached the nisuah, she was still in arusa, she goes back to the father's house, the father could sell her now into servitude. Let's read that line again. Avol l'shiflus achar ishus kiddushin, servitude after ishus of kiddushin. Kiddushin being the first stage of marriage. Motzi masvin, the father can sell her. For Rabbi Shimon, who prohibited the sale into servitude after both situations, whether it's having given her over into marriage or an initial servitude, dorish lahok Rabbi Lozer. Kevon shebogad bo shuv lo yimkarena v'dorish lanami v'dorish lanami k'Rabbi Akiva kevon shepirish taliso leo lo yimkarena. Rabbi Shimon emphasizes both aspects of the word of the reading and the tradition and the way the letters appear. Lahochi k'omar, and therefore Rabbi Shimon said lo l'shiflus achar ishus v'lo l'shiflus achar shiflus, selling her into servitude after either ishus, or after ishus being a marriage, or after an initial period of servitude, the father is restricted. He cannot do that. He cannot do either one. We turn back to the Gemara. We have a new marking scheme. And on the side where the nosei, we have a nosei klali, a general topic heading. And we indicate this goes to daf chof amar alf. So we have a rather long sugya ahead of us. When one word, yi'ud, has to do with the marriage of the Jewish girl, bondmaid, married by the master or his son. The bow tie that you see introduces she'elos b'inyan yi'ud, questions that are related to this topic of yi'ud. The first question, and we continue with the nosei mivneh, where the triangle appears, the triangles that you see shortly in the Gemara are nisyonos lanos ala shela, attempts to answer the question, yiud nisuin oisa oy erisin oisa, yiud that marriage of the master when he says to the bondmaid hare at mu'edes li, that, let's say, form of marriage of a master taking the bondmaid unto himself as a wife. Is that called erusin, or is that called nisun? Is that called full consummation of marriage? So we're going to be focusing once again on that case where a master says, Hare at Yerudali, you are to be married unto me, Bekesef Miknasaif. This is what I'm reading from the Rashi, in the lower part of the narrow lines. You are to be married unto me in exchange for the money that I paid towards your purchase that I had given to your father. Bear in mind, I know we've said this so many times, but all of these discussions concerning the Jewish bondmaid are relevant to a girl under 12 years of age. Now, the Gemara. Before we do that, actually, I always recommend to take the bird's eye approach. And you notice that the question number one has to be followed by a question number two. Question number two, you're not going to see until we get to the upper part of Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph and Mirtz Hashem. It will be part of our next shiur. So in the meantime, the balance of today's shiur is focusing on this topic. Now, what's the question? Boy, Rabo Baravua. Yi'ud, Nisuin Oise, O Erisin Oise. What does Yi'ud accomplish? And we mentioned in Rashi, the master says to her, Hare at Yi'ud Oli, Bekesef Miknasaych. You are to be married unto me in exchange for the money that I had given in my purchase of you, the money that I had given to your father. The Gemara points out nafkamina, the practical difference between classification. Is it nisuin or is it erisin? Liyorsha velitameila ulahofer nedoreha. The husband, in the event that she dies, the husband slash master, in the event that she dies after he did the kiddushay yiud, will he inherit her? Well, if it's Nisuin, then he'll inherit her. If he is a Kohen, and it accomplished Nisuin, so then the master will mitame, he'll defile himself to her if she dies. And if it's Nisuin, then the master has the exclusive right to annul her vows. As a husband annuls his wife's vows by himself, provided they consummated their marriage. So, the question is, what does Yi'ud achieve? And as we pointed out before, the triangles are here to attempt to resolve this question. Toshma, the first Toshma, the first attempt to answer, you'll notice we have a long marking, so we need to go over all these lines in order to appreciate what the Gemara's attempt is. Toshma bevigdoi ba, kevan shepiresh taliso aleo, shuv eno rashoi lemochro. We saw this in the source we saw earlier, that once Piresh Taliso, we're assuming to mean Yi'ud, marriage of master and bondmaid. Once he did Yi'ud, so the father would not be able to sell her in the future. We infer Zvuni hu de lo mazvin law. The father would not be able to sell her into servitude. Ha yeudi miayed law. However, the father would be able to give her over into marriage. And when we say yeudi miayed law, it means a standard marriage. So what are we describing? We're describing a girl that experienced Yi'ud, and then the master died. The girl went back home, and the inference is the father cannot sell her now into servitude, but the father could give her over into marriage to someone else. What did the Yi'ud accomplish? The e amris nisuin oise. If you're going to think that the yud that the original master did with her was a consummation of the marriage, kevon shenises. Once a girl, even though she's still a minor in terms of age, but once she reached nisuin with her husband, shuv ein lovio rishuspa. A father has no longer any jurisdiction over her. The father wouldn't be able to give her over into marriage. And yet, we have inferred from this source that the father is able to give her over into marriage after she had reached or experienced Yi'ud with the original owner. Elolav shmamino erusinosis. We have to conclude that the Yi'ud that the original owner did with her accomplished erusin. And as we said, he then, the original master may have divorced her, or he died, and she was still a minor. She goes back to her father's house, and having reached only Erusin, which is all the Yehud does, the father still has rights over to give her over into marriage. Now, a rejection. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. Hocha bekidushin de almokoi. The source we read above is referring to general laws of marriage, not servitude and yi'ud. Vehochi ko'omar. And the way to understand the source above, which began with the words bevigdo bab, is as follows. Kevon shem mosra aviha lemi shenischayev b'sheru k'susa v'inasa. Once a father gave his daughter into marriage to a man that ultimately is obligated in providing the three central requirements of marriage. She'era, her food, k'susa, her clothing, onasa, her marital relations. Shuv ein yochol lemochra. The father can no longer sell her. So that the source cited above doesn't shed any light on the law of yi'ud, because the source above was referring to a father giving his daughter into a, we'll say, a standard marriage. He accepted kesef kiddushin in exchange for his daughter. So once that happens, the father cannot sell her anymore. Toshma. We have another attempt to resolve our question of yi'ud. The source says, ein mochra lekrovim. A father cannot sell his minor daughter to relatives. The relatives referred to here are relatives that would not be able to marry her. Mishum Reb Lazer Omer Moichra Lekroivin. Reb Lazer says she can be sold to relatives. Vishovin, there is agreement. Shem Moichra, she can be sold as a bondmaid. Almona Lekoyen Godol. Grusha V'chalutza Lekoyen Hedyot. A father is selling his daughter, who is two possibilities, an almona, she's a widow, and she's being sold to a kohen gadol. Kohen gadol is not allowed to marry an almona. That's by way of general knowledge. As far as the laws of father and his rights to sell, so we're told here, he can sell his daughter, who is now an almona, she's a widow. She's, of course, still under 12 years of age. I know that might sound obvious, but we sometimes repeat anyway. And likewise, if she happened to be divorced or participated in chalitza, she could be sold to a kohen hedyot, a common kohen who, in general, is not allowed to marry a divorcee or a chalitza participant. Hai almona hechidomi. Here the Gemara, in order to develop the point, we have to connect all of this information to the issue of yud. What is the case of almona? What does it mean that a father is selling his daughter who is an almona? What happened? And you'll notice the double underline, and on the side under the mivneh heading, we indicate these are shlavim, stages, lavin, hadikotani, almona. What are the circumstances here? And finally, when we get to the bottom of this, we'll then have the basis of answering our question of yud. In the meantime, what does almona mean? Hechi domi, I lema de kodesh nafsha. If you're talking about a minor, a little girl, she's under 12, who on her own went and married herself off to some gentleman, and the guy died. Almona kori lo, would you call her an almona? There was no marriage to begin with. A little girl has no power to marry herself off. And we're talking, especially in the case where she has a father. Vielo, the kid shavia. What What might it mean? The father had married her off to someone. Well, and the source then is saying, the father had married her off, and the fellow to whom she married passed away. She goes back to her father's house because she's still a minor. And the father can then sell her as a bondmaid to a Kohen Gadol. So she's an almona. Her husband died. Yeah, but mi motzi masvin lo. Would the father be able to sell her once he gave her over into marriage? A father cannot sell his daughter into servitude after he had given her over into marriage. Now we just read three lines. There's a lot of information packed into these lines of Gemara. So we're going to go over some. We'll go over background information and then read the Gemara again and appreciate what we just saw. On Daf Yud Tes Amud Aleph, toward the end of the narrow lines, toward the end of the narrow lines of the Gemara, you'll notice it says there on Yud Tes Amud Aleph, my Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda, having mentioned Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda, but just by name, what is the source in which his law appears? Desanya. So the source there says Ya'ada Vehefda. These are words from Shmos, Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Ches, the Pasuk that we've already read a few times. And the words Ya'ada Vehefda appear together. Tzorech Shehe Sheus B'yom Kedei Pedia. In order for Yud to take place, in order for the marriage to take place, there has to be enough time left in her servitude. In other words, just imagine she's nearing the end of 6 years of work, and the time is ticking away, and she's almost completed the 6 years. There has to be enough time in the day. That's kidei pedia. That means enough time that if the father would want to redeem her, he would be able to give money for her redemption. That would be, let us say, a pruta worth of work time left. If, let us say, there was, say, just 2 minutes before the end of the 6 years, 2 minutes of her work would be worth less than a pruta. It's already too late. So the marriage of the master with his bondmaid is where's the money, let us say? Where's the money that a man, in this case the master, paying? Where's he paying for her? So the Gemara says, Mikan Omer Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, Im Yesh Sheus B'yon K'dei Lasus Imo Shova Pruta, if there's enough time in the day, toward the end of those 6 years, that the balance of the time till the literal completion of the 6 years is enough time for her to do a shove pruta's worth of work. And then he, of course, the master says, you don't have to work the last, let's say, 20 minutes. In exchange, if you're not working, we consider that my marriage money. I'm giving you freedom of work in exchange for marrying me. Mikudeshes. She would be married. Vimlav, ain't a mikudeshes. And if there isn't that minimum amount of work time value left, and he would propose to her marriage, she would not be married. So what's the kesef kiddushin, so to speak? Where is the marriage money in this scenario? Alma kosovar, from here we see, moi sarishonis lav likidushin itnu. According to the first opinion in the Gemara, the initial money that the master paid for the girl, that's mo'os harishonos, the initial payment for her has nothing to do with marriage money. In order for us to come up with the idea of marriage money, we focus on the last few minutes of her work, of her servitude, and that if worth a pruta, if the last 20 minutes of her work or 15 minutes of her work would have been worth a pruta, and she's relieved of that, that is what she's receiving. She's receiving the freedom of work as her payment for her marriage. There's another opinion, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, Amar Afilu Teima L'Kiddushin. And even if you take the opinion that the money that the master paid to the father for the initial purchase contained within it the potential for marriage, then what about this idea of having a certain minimum amount of time required to be left over at the end? We wouldn't seem to need that anymore, yet you do. Shaini hocha diyoma rachmono vehefda. The pasuk used the word vehefda, which is pidyon. There has to be enough time left in the day before the termination, the completion of the 6 years, that in potential the father could have redeemed her. And redeemed her means pay the master a minimum amount of money, i.e. a pruta. So it's a detail in the laws of Yud. But as far as classifying the Kesev Kiddushin, according to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, it's not that last moment of work. The initial amount paid for her servitude contained within it married the identity of marriage money as well. Of course, we just learned all of that for background purposes, because we're trying to understand the explanation of the source of father selling his daughter, who is an almona, to a kohen gadol after she had been married. But we have already learned that a father cannot sell his daughter into servitude, which is what we're talking about now, selling her to the kohen gadol for servitude after she had been married. So Rav Amram explains that this source is talking about Kiddushei Yud, not a situation where the father had married her off. The father had sold her into servitude, and the master did Yud, and the master died. Did the father give her over into marriage? Did the father receive marriage money? Nope. Because this is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, that said the money that was paid for her, the mois harishainos, lav likidushin itnu, were not given for marriage purposes. So the father was not involved himself in her getting married to the master. All the father did was sold her into servitude, which is an institution, a legal entity within which marriage could take place. But it's not the father that generated the marriage. And that's because of this shita, this approach that says the mois harishonos, the initial money paid for, was not for marriage purposes. It was simply a transaction involving the purchase and sale of a bondmaid. Okay, so she entered a yiud marriage that the father was not involved with. What about the level of marriage that the yiud accomplished? We have a new marking. This is indicated on the side. This is a marking that's going to flip around back and forth. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a certain flow and ebb in this Gemara. The house marking with the point facing up is a haychacha lekivun de'erusinos. It's a proof or demonstration that Yud only accomplished erusin, the first stage of marriage, but not a consummation of the marriage. The house flipped over is a rejection of whatever we said. The use of the diamond is featured on the side. Machlokes amaroyim b'divrei Rabbi Yossi Yehuda. The Amoraic controversy within Rabbi Yossi Yehuda b'inyan Kiddushei Yud. This Amoraic controversy we actually learned already by skipping to the lower part of Yud Tes Omed Aleph. What's the Machlokes Amoroyim? Im Oimrim Demois Rishonis Likidushin or Lav Likidushin Itnu. The initial purchase money given to the father by the master, did that contain within it any marriage identity, or was it strictly a business payment? Say business payment means strictly a purchase of a bondmate. Now the Gemara, we continue with the first house marking, the E Amris Nisu and Oisa. If you were to say that that master generated Yiud marriage accomplished Nisuin, a consummation of the marriage. Kevon Shenise Shuv Ein Lo Via Rishuspa. Once a daughter enters a Nisuin relationship, consummates her marriage, the father has no longer any jurisdiction over her. And the source said that the father is able to sell the almona to a kohen gadol, but he can sell. He's still in the fray. He's still in the picture. He is selling her as a shivcha. What then did the yiud accomplish? It accomplished erusin. As you can see, that's the end of the long marking. That's the toshma. The purpose of the toshma was to show that yiud creates erusin. The Gemara, though, is now going to reject it. That's why you have a flipped over house. And the Gemara says, V'yelomai, Erusin Ose. So what do you want to conclude? That it creates Erusin? It's said in the source above, Fishovin Shemochra. Notice we have an arrow also to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see where this quote comes from. V'shoven shemocha. There's agreement that she can be sold into servitude. But if you're going to say that she had reached she was a kiddusha yud, which accomplished erusin, ha ein adam mocher esbito l'shivchus acharishus. The father cannot sell his daughter into servitude once she was given over, once she experienced ishus, even if the ishus was only erusin. And yet, the source says that she can be sold. How are you, who want to derive from that source that you creates Erusin, how are you going to justify her having been given over to Erusin, having reached Erusin, and still being sold by the father into servitude? How do you explain that? So, you're going to have to say, Shiny Erusin Dito, me Erusin Davia. There's some intrinsic difference between Erusin that she created, namely where the father was not involved, namely Kiddushei Yud, Erusin Dovia, in contrast to a case where the father gave her over into Erusin, gave her over into marriage. In the case of Erusin Dida, so you'll say, since the father didn't give her over into marriage, he simply sold her to as a bondmaid. The father still has control over her in the event that she becomes available. She goes back to his house. He can sell her. That's just the nature of Erusin Dida is different than Erusin Dida, concerning which the rule that we know of Ein Odo Mochers Bito the Shifchus Achar Ishus, a father cannot sell his daughter into servitude after Ishus, that's Ishus that he initiated. Aha, so once you have to come on to that distinction, namely Erusin Dida versus Erusin Dida, Afilu Teimon Nisuin Oise. You could argue that Yud actually represents Nisuin, a consummation of the marriage. And you asked the question before, but once a girl reaches Nisuin, the father's control over her is totally gone. Not so, because shiny nisuin dida, mi nisuin diavia, there is room to make a distinction between nisuin that she initiated from the case of nisuin that the father initiated. So at this point in the Gemara, we don't have anything conclusive about what did the yiud accomplish. The Gemara says, and notice how the house marking the point now faces up again. The Gemara here is going to reject the point that was just made. The point that was just made tried to parallel the way you make a distinction in Erusin is the same way you'll make a distinction in Nisuin. Didah versus Didah. That is not a legitimate parallel. Hi, my. How can you compare them? Bishlama, Erusin, may Erusin shiny. I can understand making a distinction within the realm of Erusin. An Erusin that the father initiated. There, the Torah says, oh, the father initiated the Erusin, the father can no longer sell her. Versus an Erusin that the father had nothing to do with. The master did the Erusin, so the father had nothing to do with it. He doesn't lose his rights to sell her eventually into Shifchus. Elo Nisuin mi Nisuin. Try to make a distinction within Nisuin. The Gemara continues at the top of Daf Yud Tes. Mi Shaini. Rashi is very terse here. Rashi at the top says Mi Shaini. Kevon de Nisuin do Raisoninu Nafko Legamri Mirshuse. Rashi says since Nisuin is a Torah level departure, so she's totally out of her father's domain. And once she leaves his domain in a Nisuin form, doesn't matter how she left, whether it's something that she initiated or it's something he initiated. She has left his domain completely. And the source would not have said that he could sell her as an almona who had achieved Nisuin then to a Kohen Gadol. The father would have lost total control over her. The Meforshim, the commentaries here, they're not totally comfortable with the just looking at Rashi, we'll say at face value. Rashi made an emphasis on the term, since Nisuin is Doraisa, is a Torah level phenomenon. Tosfos at the bottom of Yud Ches Amud Beis in the Dibur Masel Bishlama, he says, well, Erusin is also a Torah level phenomenon. Tosfos himself goes on, he elaborates and he explains what the distinction between Erusin is in our Gemara versus Nisuin, why the Gemara views them differently, and the Ritva commentary also deals with this. And I believe that when you look at the language of the Ritva, which you might notice in the margin of your Gemara, so let's read the Lashon of the Ritva together, and he'll through what he says, and then you look at Tosfos, you'll see what the distinction is. So the Ritva says, Pirush de Bishlamo Erusin lo mafki lo mirshus ovia elo. In the case of Erusin, a girl doesn't leave her father's domain. Elo shatero hechmira olav shelo yimkarena. That when a father gave his daughter over in Erusin, the Torah imposes a stringency upon him that you, father, cannot sell her into servitude anymore. Inka, now let's go over that point again and say that look, the girl hasn't really left his domain. Erusin is not considered a departure from the father's domain, so if she hasn't departed from his domain, so why shouldn't he be allowed to sell her into servitude after Erusin? The answer is the Torah Hichmira Lov. So Inka Lameimar Dahainu Kishikit Shahu. This stringency imposed on the father will limit it to a case where he, the father, gave her over into marriage. Avol Niskat Shahi, if it's a Kiddushin that the father was not involved with, namely the case of Kiddushe Yud, Ukmo Adina Shehi Brishus Oviyah. There, we can say we're going to go according to the letter of the law, the principle that she's still in her father's domain. Oh, since in the case of a marriage that she initiated, in the sense that it was the Kiddushei Yud where the father was not involved, so the father still has a right to sell her. In the event that she becomes an almona, the father could still sell her into servitude. Ella nisuin midino mafki mirshus av. When it comes to nisuin, and here you can see Rashi's expression. Rashi was very terse, but here you see what Rashi was saying. In the case of nisuin, a consummation of marriage, there, by letter of the law, she leaves the father's domain. The havelu kebagrus. It's legally no different than her reaching bagrus, 12 and a half years of age, total adulthood. And being that nisuin is a complete departure from father's domain, umali nisuin dida, o nisuin didei. At that point, there would be no reason for making any distinction between nisuin that the father was not initially involved with versus a nisuin that the father initially was involved in. Tosfos essentially explains along these lines as well. So at this point in the Gemara, as far as Yud, does it accomplish Erusin or accomplish Nisuin? It would appear that it accomplishes only Erusin, because if it accomplished Nisuin, the father would not be able to sell her as an almona to a Kohen Gadol, not allowed to sell her at all. The Gemara, also the Gemara's explanation was. The Gemara's explanation, presumed accepting the analysis that the mois harishonos, the first payment, the initial payment that the master gave to the father, had nothing to do with marriage, and therefore you're dealing with a case of erusin dida, her initiated erusin, the father wasn't involved, and therefore the father still has a right to sell her. What would be if you view the mois harishonos as marriage money? The initial sale of the father to the master paid him money for purchasing the girl. That's like, there's an element of master paying marriage money to the father. So then you would say, in light of everything we've said, that it's as if the father gave her over into marriage. And once a father gives her over into marriage, we saw in our sources before, once that there's agreement Ein Adam, or we saw in our Gemara before, Ein Adam Moicher is Bito L'Shifchus Acharishus. A father cannot sell his daughter to servitude after his giving her over into marriage. So now let's continue with the Gemara at the top of Yud Tes. Ularav Nachum Bar Yitzchok Diomar Afilu L'Rab Yosi Rab Yehuda Mois Rishonis L'Kiddusha Nitnu. According to Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchok, who said that the first the initial money paid by the master to the father is considered Kiddushin, is considered marriage money, and if it's considered marriage money, so then we can't call it anymore Kiddushin Dida. So B'mai Moikim Law, how are you going to understand the source where it said that a father could sell his daughter an almona to a Kohen Gadol? What do you mean the father can still sell her into servitude? But he gave her over in the sale. He accepted money from the master, which also is marriage money. So the father already married her off in that sense. The Gemara explains, Moikim law Kerebi Eliezer. This Amor of Nachman Bar Yitzchok, who said that according to Rabbi Yossi Behuda, the first merit, the purchase money, also had a Kiddushin identity to it, he will learn the unnamed source in the middle of Yud Ches Amud Beis that said, Shavin Shemoichra Almona L'Kayin Gadol. You know who authored that? Rabbi Eliezer. Tiomar, the Shifchus Achar Shifchus Hu Delo Motzi Masvin Lo, that the only restriction on a father is selling her into servitude after he already sold her once into servitude. Avol, the Shifchus Achar Ishus Motzi Masvin Lo, selling her into servitude after he, the father, had given her over into marriage, that's okay. It's okay so that, fine, the Mos HaRishonos, like Rav Nachman Yitzchok said, the Mos HaRishonos, according to Rabbi Yossi Yehuda, were Likidushin. So fine, the father gave her over into marriage in that sense, in that initial sale of her into servitude. It contained within it the formula, the element of marriage, potential marriage. Fine, it's the father's initiation of the marriage, so to speak. That doesn't preclude him from a subsequent sale of her into servitude in the event that she becomes an almona from that Kiddushei Yiyud. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.